Hello, I'm Dr. Sarah Jarvis, and welcome to The Hepcast, a podcast series about the people fighting to eliminate viral hepatitis, a virus that affects 350 million people worldwide. In our fourth and final episode of Series 2, we'll explore viral hepatitis among migrant and refugee populations and the structural and racial barriers that prevent this population from being screened and linked to care. And as you'll hear, we have some extraordinary and, frankly, quite worrying stories. Joining us today are four incredible advocates who've dedicated their lives to reaching this population and supporting those living with viral hepatitis. I make no apology for telling you that the most important person on our recording today is Sydney Vo. And that's because not only is she a hepatitis B advocate, but she has been living with hepatitis B, having been diagnosed in 2007 when she was pregnant with her son in her home country of Vietnam. She moved to Australia about a year later and provided an invaluable service helping fill the gap in the workforce in childhood education. But that was not the end of the story, and we'll be hearing from Sydney about the barriers that she faced when she applied for permanent residency in Australia. Professor Mohammed Ali is a surgeon and a hepatitis advocate, and he founded the National Liver Foundation of Bangladesh. This is a philanthropic organization and, much needed, dedicated to prevention, treatment, education, and research on all varieties of liver diseases in Bangladesh. But Professor Ali has a particular passion for improving policies for refugee communities, and he's going to be telling us in particular about some of his recent research on the Rohingya refugee population in Bangladesh. Camilla Picchio is a multidisciplinary public health researcher focusing on health systems' responses to viral hepatitis at the Barcelona Institute for Global Health, and that institute aims to address the challenges impacting global health. She's also the project manager of HPV Comsava, focusing on West African migrants in the greater Barcelona area, and she will tell us a little bit more about that. Last but by no means least, Maria Buti is a veteran of viral hepatitis work for the last 35 years. She has been working particularly in diagnosis and therapy of hepatitis B and hepatitis C. She is an active member of a wide variety of professional organizations, as well as being the vice president of the Spanish Association of the Study of Liver Diseases and co-author of a variety of guidances, including guidance on addressing hepatitis in Ukrainian refugees from the ECDC. So, without further ado, let us take ourselves back to that personal experience. Sydney, I'm going to start with you. I know that you found out that you were living with hepatitis B when you were pregnant with your first child. Tell us a little bit about that.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for giving me a chance to speak out one more time again about my story of migrating to Australia. So in 2007, when I first got pregnant to my son, Billy, I went to see the doctor just for checkup for the pregnancy. So we did all the blood tests and everything, found out that was the first time I knew that I had hepatitis B. I wasn't worried at all because I've heard about that. And it was really prevalent in Vietnam back then. My friends and my in-laws' family have had hepatitis B as well. So I thought it's just a common disease. And the doctor didn't warn me or say anything about that. So I just went through the days and just felt like normal as any other people had hepatitis B back then. But then in 2009, when I applied for our first student visa to go to Australia to study, sponsored by my family, I got past the visa easily as well. I'm not sure at that time the immigration agent, if they ticked that I had hepatitis B or not, all the paperwork done by them. They didn't ask anything, but I got the visa passed. And then I came here with the 4 years student visa. And then I reapply for another visa after the first visa expired. Again, I declared that time in Australia. They said they would pass me, but I have to see the doctor looking after my health. And I said, sure, I'll do that. And they passed the visa as well. It was just a temporary visa as the student visa. But then until 2016, when I first got the job, a full-time job, filling the gap of a shortage in early childhood education and care in the regional area of Canberra, the capital city of Australia, moved here, left Melbourne City. And I applied for permanent residency under that sponsorship visa from work and found out that I didn't pass the visa requirement because of the hepatitis B. I was really shocked because I passed all the previous, but this time it's a permanent visa. So they said I would be a burden on the taxpayers in Australia when I was one of the taxpayers as well, but they didn't consider that. And thinking that I would cost them so much money, I would be a big burden to the community. So they rejected my visa after two times of trying to appeal back to the tribunal and asking for the Minister of Immigration to intervene for my case, but they rejected it all. But then I wasn't convinced with the result, I went public to speak out about my story. At first, I was very scared of imposing my personal health to the public because of my son, Billy, who came with me to Australia in 2009. And until 2016, he was 11, 12 years old, and he doesn't in the Vietnamese language really well. He grew up in Australia. I was just worrying for Billy. I thought, what will we do when we go back to Vietnam? So I took all the courage and everything. I contacted the SBS News in Australia, and I had some connection with the people who were working in the media in Canberra as well. They helped me. And I got so many interviews from those media companies, ABC, and I got my story publicized, and the people, they saw me. They invited me to one of the HBV conference, so October 2019. That time, I'd already packed, about to leave for Vietnam for good. They invited me to join that conference and talk about my story again. So they wrote a group support letter and asked one of the Member of Parliament House in Victoria to talk with the Minister of Immigration to intervene for me for the third time. And eventually he did. He only granted me 1 year tourist visa for me to start everything all over again. And then I came back to Canberra and apply for a job again, different company. They sponsor me now, and I'm on a different visa.
Sadiq, that was extraordinary. So, Maria, we've heard some extraordinary examples there of discrimination, of problems for an individual refugee, in this case, Sydney's story of her trip from Vietnam to Australia and the issues that she faced with the authorities there. But I have no doubt that she is not alone. And I know that refugees from Ukraine, of course, are at the top of many people's thoughts now. Can you tell us a little bit about the EASL, WHO, ECDC joint statement about refugees from Ukraine in relation to viral hepatitis care?
Thank you, Sarah. For Israel, it's a major concern. Refugees and people asking asylum. These people now, more than 7 million, had fled Ukraine, primarily to Hungary, Poland, Romania, Slovakia, and Republic of Moldova. And Israel is concerned about this because Ukraine has high prevalence of hepatitis B and hepatitis C. The C and WHO clearly recommends to ensure that the needs of the refugees in relation to viral hepatitis are appropriately met for all stages along the continuum of care. That means that this of this disease is much higher than in other European countries. And this joint statement between ESEL, European CDC, and WHO recommends that across different European countries, the following actions: vaccination against hepatitis B and hepatitis A, testing for viral hepatitis should be voluntary or offered to all adults refugees in a non-discriminatory manner, not in the way that Cindy has explained, and also linkage to care and treatment. We thought that these actions are very important to fight stigma because patients with viral hepatitis, refugees, non-refugees, migrants, have this stigma. And the only way is that the community accept and help people living with viral hepatitis.
Maria, I couldn't agree with you more. And I know, Professor Ali, you will be nodding away there because if you hear the experience of those refugees from Ukraine, I think many of those messages are replicated in the experience of the Rohingya refugees that you've worked with. Can you tell us a little bit about the project that you initiated and why you felt it was so important?
I'd like to thank everybody for giving me this opportunity to speak in this refugee issues. You know, the Rohingya refugees are there. And they came to Bangladesh about 5 years back in 2017, and they settled in Cox's Bazar district. We noticed that about 30,000 pregnant women are there, and little is known about the prevalence of hepatitis B and C among them. So we think, could you conduct a study to see their hepatitis B and C status, and particularly for the pregnant mothers, so that we can provide hepatitis B vaccine as well as immunoglobulin to their neonates. So we conducted first study in 2017 among 300 pregnant women. And it was found that 3% was having hepatitis B, 8% was found to be having hepatitis C, and 1% having both hepatitis B and C. So with this, it created a curiosity then that they are suffering in mass population, particularly pregnant women, 8% test positive. Then we planned for making second study in 2019 among 2,000 general population of all ages. At that time, 4% found to be having hepatitis B and 11% found to have hepatitis C. And it was shown that adult population having much more than that of children population, and females having more hepatitis C than males, about 26% female having hepatitis C and 18% male having hepatitis C. So we noticed that in Bangladesh, that is, the prevalence of hepatitis C is 0.6%. This high prevalence of hepatitis C among the Rohingya refugees, which is about 18 times more than the prevalence in Bangladesh, is likely to pose challenges to the healthcare systems of the host country, Bangladesh. And we published this article at the Clinical Liver Disease Journal. So we made plea that there is an immediate need for well-organized studies to assess the risk for viral hepatitis transmission and capacity of health system in camps to deliver preventive care and treatment services, so that the ultimate goal is to control this deadly disease among them, so that the elimination is possible for both the viruses.
So, Professor, what I've heard from that, when you conducted this study, 1 in 8 pregnant women had hepatitis B, hepatitis C, or both. Overall, 1 in 7 had one or the other or both of these potentially deadly diseases. What challenges or barriers did you overcome when trying to reach this refugee population?
The first thing we noticed that there was a difficulty to get blood samples, mostly from the women, and particularly from the pregnant women. They are not at all interested to provide the blood sample for any testing. And another thing we noticed that they have got the poor health consciousness. And also there was language barrier. And particularly women feeling shy to come forward out of their shelters. Overall, we noticed there was a misconception about testing. And another most important thing we found, that there is no conception among them about the hepatitis B or C and its consequences and its complications.
And what are the key learnings from your experience with the Rohingya Project that you like to share with others who do want, like you have, to engage with refugee or migrant communities?
We approached the head of the government administration of the Rohingya refugees camps about the concept and outcome of our study, and made a request to the health authorities of the camps to give us permission. The camp leaders were approached about the procedure and safety testing of the hepatitis B and C among the refugees under their supervision. And the camp leaders also asked to communicate the refugees in their own dialects and encourage them to come forward for testing, which is safe and beneficial for them. And we designed Nohe volunteers from the host community. They went door to door with the camp leaders and provided token for testing and convincing the camp leaders as well as the commoners to come forward for testing. In spite of all, there was poor response for giving the sample. And finally, we must have to provide some incentives for those who will come forward for testing of hepatitis B and C. With this, we overcome these difficulties.
There's some clear messages there. A combination of engaging with community leaders, getting across the message in that person's own language about the benefits and the potential benefits of testing, and of course, making them feel safe, making them feel that they are not going to be discriminated against on that basis. Maria, I know that you wanted to come back on this.
Yeah, I think, Sarah, this is very important. Mohammed has explained the importance of having community workers, particularly including refugees. And the other important thing is the last WHO recommendation, that is having point-of-care testing, self-testing. So given the opportunity to have a rapid test and sometimes saliva test that you don't need to play with a blood test, I think this help. And also the new technologies, iPhones and so on, we can just work on this and having educational programs explain for these refugees what is viral hepatitis, how to prevent, how to treat. I think education is also extremely important. And among refugees, we can have some leaders, opinion leaders, that can help involving the rest of the community workings and explain better what is viral hepatitis and the benefits of early diagnosis and treatment.
Thank you. And Camilla, we have heard about the experience of refugees in Europe, the experience of refugees in Asia. What about the experience of refugees from Africa, the group with whom I know, as part of HB Comsava, you have been working?
Thanks, Sarah. Yeah, we work with primarily West African migrants. We actually have not had anyone who is a refugee or asylum seeker participate in the program. But I actually wanted to talk upon the importance of using tools to educate about viral hepatitis, like Professor Ali and Dr. Boudi have just mentioned. Within HBV Comsava, we actually use an interactive tool called Heparjoc, which was co-created with migrant and refugee populations and the International Health Department here in Barcelona. And it's actually an interactive tool which explains what hepatitis B is through games, which we actually use on tablets. So it's a set of 4 or 5 games, which participants, as they're waiting to be screened, oftentimes we use with cultural mediators, and we actually walk them through these games. Because it was co-created and co-developed with migrant and refugee populations, including West African migrants, Pakistani migrants, Moroccan, which are all migrant populations, which are very prevalent here in Barcelona and in Catalonia. And we're able to walk them through just by using games. We don't need to do fancy PowerPoint presentations to explain oftentimes complex things, but we do it through simple games, which are also available in their local languages, which is a great tool that we've been using.
Fascinating. So local languages, making it easy for them to understand. But of course, in order for them to engage with the games, you have to engage with those migrants. So what were some of the barriers, the cultural barriers to engaging migrants in the first place and then getting them to engage in care?
So the overall objective of HBV Comme Ça Va is actually to simplify the entire care pathway for migrant populations here in the greater Barcelona. One of the main structural barriers that we've seen, structural and cultural, is one, a lack of awareness about viral hepatitis. So many of our participants didn't know about viral hepatitis. And another one, which is something structural, is migration status. So there are some of our migrants who are participating who are irregular migrants or not formally recognized in Spain and therefore the health system. However, in Catalonia, we actually have universal health access. So everyone has the right to use the public health system. One of the barriers we see here is that people actually don't know that. They think that because they're irregular migrants, that they don't have access to the health system and therefore have not applied for their hospital cards or for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to receive one. So one way that we try and overcome this within the project is we actually facilitate expedited health cards through a partnership with our health department, where we're able to actually provide hospital numbers and hospital cards to migrants without needing to see their proof of residency.
Sydney, can I come to you and ask your experience? We've heard there that many of these migrant and refugee populations don't know very much about the impact of hepatitis B and C, even if they have heard of it. Can you tell me something about, for instance, what you knew when you were first diagnosed, and indeed, importantly, what support and education you had when you got to Australia?
So before moving to Australia, I wasn't really worried about my health with hepatitis B. I knew that I had hepatitis B. And about 2 years later, I went to see a GP, and a GP made it really extremely serious about my health, and he made me concerned more. So he recommended me to see a specialist. And then the specialist got me to see him more regularly. And then, I don't know, I started worried and concerned more about hepatitis B. So I got support from my specialist, from my GP, and I checked for my health regularly by the schedule that the clinic made it for me. I didn't face any barrier. The only thing that I was concerned is about the finance, because that time I couldn't access to the health care system in Australia because I wasn't a permanent resident yet. Everything that I pay privately. And it was so expensive to see a specialist in Australia. So I think that's one of the barriers that a migrant who on a temporary visa would face. That would be one of the biggest barriers that would make the temporary visa migrant not go to see and continue after healthcare when they're in Australia.
Maria, we've heard from Camilla and from Sydney this recurring theme about access to health services for both refugees and particularly in both of their cases for migrants. How much of a concern, the healthcare service and so on, is it in, for instance, the Ukrainian population and other refugee populations?
I think this is very country dependent. So it's not the same in some European countries that have a universal public health. And as Camila has mentioned, everybody can apply or at least can receive some public health help. In another countries, because it's private, then we need an insurance company, and probably it's more difficult for migrants and for refugees. But I think across the majority of European countries, there is universal healthcare, and this clearly facilitates this. But I think it's also really important that migrants and refugees have enough information on the peculiarities of the country that they are now living. And for this reason, community workers and also patients' organizations can play an important role. Information is critical because if they don't know the system and how to reach, it's very difficult. And usually physicians are not very good giving this type of information. We help in diagnosis, in treatment, but not giving this information. And community workers probably can provide a better help in this way.
Camilla.
Yeah, so just to bounce off of Maria's comment here, I can't stress enough the importance of community health workers. Within our program, we have two community health agents who are actually part of the migrant communities themselves. One is from Ghana and one is from Senegal. And they are pivotal in this entire program. While we're out in the community screening, they're able to communicate in local languages. They're able to be a helping hand, a listening ear to the people who are participating in the screening program. That where people feel comfortable, they feel safe and they're comfortable, not only because they see that part of the team are people from their community, but also because we're actually screening in community settings. So we go out and we screen in religious spaces, that could be a church or a mosque or community spaces, local city halls, and we take advantage of meetings or events that they already have planned where people already are going to be there. So they're going to their church on Sunday, so we know they're going to be there. We speak with community leaders about coming out there and setting up our little pop-up clinic. And because people are already there, and we've spoken not only with the community health agents, but also with the community leaders, which is also pivotal, to have them really advocate and encourage everyone that, hey, look, these people are here, they want to help, they're going to offer us hepatitis testing. I encourage you all to go out there and get tested. And the first thing that happens is that these community leaders are the first ones out there being tested, which then motivates everyone else to come out and participate, which is really a wonderful thing to see.
Hugely important, leading from the front. But I think those community workers, you've got a wonderful personal story of how one of your community workers helped somebody to overcome their internal stigma when they were diagnosed.
Yes. So last year, actually, someone received a diagnosis on a rapid test, and I wasn't able to really calm him down. He was very flustered. He was very overwhelmed. He just wasn't really registering anything that anyone was saying. But the moment that Omar, who was our community health agent, came over and started speaking to him, pulled him aside and explained the importance of going to see a doctor. Because within the program, which I think is also a huge strength of our program, is that we have a wonderful collaboration with two of the leading hospitals in Barcelona. So anyone who's positive on a rapid test gets referred directly to the specialist, in this case, Dr. Booty at Vallebron, or our colleagues at Hospital Clinic. Patients are directly referred, so they don't have to go through the entire referral process through primary care. And he was able to really one-on-one explain the importance of getting to the specialist to be evaluated. And without him, I don't think I would have been able to manage that on my own. So without him and without our community health workers, I don't think this program would be as successful as it is. They are crucial.
Well, aren't we lucky to have them? Maria, you have experience clearly of working with migrants and with refugees. They have some different challenges, but some of them are, I think, in many respects, very similar from what we've heard. What do you think specifically is a challenge or are the challenges for refugees compared to other populations, perhaps compared to migrant populations?
I think for refugees, the majority of them lives in refugee spaces that they have a limited access to the healthcare systems. And also they are in a very unstable situation. Some of them are going to move. They don't know what will be the final destination. And this is completely, it's a different situation. And usually they left the country due to the majority of cases in relation to a war, that it's completely different, that migrants that they decided spontaneously to move to another country and they choose the country, probably the psychological situation by sure is completely different. So I think the emotional situation of the refugees makes more difficult that healthcare, particularly viral hepatitis and some diseases that are really asymptomatic or with very few symptoms are a priority for these populations. And I think the situation from migrants is completely different because they have a country, a more stable situation, and probably they can access through our community health workers or other migrants, they can have more access to the healthcare system. And the psychological situation that for me is critical is completely different.
Thank you. Professor Ali, I'm going to come to you because we heard earlier from Maria about the AASL-WHO-ECDC joint statement. And its title really says it all, Ensuring High-Quality Viral Hepatitis Care for Refugees, in this case, from Ukraine. But how do you think learnings from that joint statement could be translated to support high-quality viral hepatitis care in refugee crises across the globe? Because, of course, the plight of the Rohingya refugees reminds us that this is not a single crisis.
Actually, this large number of displaced population affected by this hepatitis B and C, and they are remaining undiagnosed and untreated, and they are in a human tragedy. And it's particularly these pregnant mothers are transmitted to their newborns. It is a real tragedy. There should be a setup of a well-structured diagnosis and treatment facility for viral hepatitis among them, so that the mass awareness should be there, and these cases, those who are suffering, should be picked up and brought under diagnosis and treatment care. And it should be in a structured way, not in a randomized way, doing some study or giving some help, and they are in a very highly unhygienic, vulnerable situation. And it is different from other refugees of the world. They are in the hill, they are in the roadside and other things, and climate and other problems are there. And the most important thing is among these Rohingya refugees are most of them have educationally rearward, and they have got the very poor hygienic knowledge and health knowledge about this overall health situation among them. So all those things, what should be done, addressing not only this, only the viral hepatitis, other parameters of their health situation, sanitation, communication, care facilities, particularly this woman just yesterday, it completed 5 years. We don't know how long these poor refugees are staying in Bangladesh. Nobody can give any timeline. Then this year they will go, or whether they will at all they will return to Bangladesh or not. So it's a very long time procedure, and a large number of people are affected and silently suffering, and most important, they are unknowing. And this mass population has got the poor knowledge about the hepatitis B and C, its transmission and consequences.
Sydney, can I come to you and ask, you've heard a lot about the need for organized programs and the importance of making people aware of their diagnosis. Now, of course, the earlier you're diagnosed, the earlier you can get treatment, it is absolutely crucial. How important then is it at a personal level that people get emotional support? What was the emotional, the psychological impact on you of your diagnosis and indeed of the attitude of the authorities?
The emotional impact on me, which I have felt and faced that, this anxiety of speaking and telling the whole world that I'm having hepatitis B, and that made me feel like I was judged by the community. So that's why I never felt the need of sharing my story to the people at work, because I don't know how much they know about hepatitis B, and the moment that they know that hepatitis B is contagious and they don't have a thorough knowledge about hepatitis B, they would judge me, and that put a lot of fear on me. And I'm so careful and cautious of who I was going to share about my chronic disease. That's always in the back of my mind. That make me feel very anxious about telling people about my chronic hepatitis B.
Maria.
In addition to the comments by Sine, the personal feeling that it's really important, it's also important to know that early diagnosis is also critical for the community. It's the only way to prevent the transmission of the infection to relatives and others. So at community level, recognize people with viral hepatitis, it's important. And the EASL statement not only benefits refugees and migrants, also benefits the hosting populations. In fact, the policy measures protect vulnerable groups in general tend to result in an improvement in the population health as well. So I think this joint statement is not only useful for Ukrainian crisis, it can apply to migrants and also can apply to other populations.
Such an important comment there, Camilla. This can improve the health of the entire community. We've heard there from Sydney talking about her concerns as an immigrant, not that there wasn't enough information for immigrants, but that there wasn't enough understanding among the general population. What can we do to improve awareness, not just about immigrant and refugee populations overcoming cultural barriers there, perhaps, but also to help the wider population to understand the importance of early diagnosis and treatment?
This is a crucial topic. And first of all, Sydney, I just like to say, I'm so sorry that you had to experience that and you had to deal with kind of a lack of awareness from people just for something that they don't understand. And I know that can be super frustrating. And so I'm very moved by your story. In order to overcome that, I think viral hepatitis needs to be spoken about regularly. It needs to be on the radar. We need to have celebrities and top politicians talking about this. What happened with the HIV movement back in the 80s and 90s and the early 2000s, people who are very vocal. And I think HIV is still also very highly stigmatized. I think we're working to reduce the stigma associated with HIV. And I think the same thing needs to be done for viral hepatitis. I think we need advocates on the global stage talking about viral hepatitis, telling their story. So people like you, Sydney, sharing your experience and telling people, hey, it's okay. I'm not infectious. There's something wrong with me. You can still be my friend. You can still talk to me. And we need these messages being amplified by important people, you know, people on global stages who have this privilege of having platforms to get important messages across, not just about stigma associated with viral hepatitis, but also to go out there and get tested themselves.
So you have introduce beautifully what I was going to suggest should be my last question to all of you, ladies and gentlemen, and that is, what immediate steps can the viral hepatitis community take to improve a positive impact for anyone living with or at risk of viral hepatitis, not just within those marginalized communities, but on the broader stage? You've given us a great example. Camilla, you want to come back with another example. Go for it.
So I think the immediate steps that we can take is to simplify, is to make it easier for not just vulnerable populations, but the population in general to go out and get tested. I think working in communities, offering testing in community settings, at your primary care office, in any space available is going to be crucial. Right now, the process of getting diagnosed can be lengthy. There's multiple doctor visits, there's referrals, there's blood draws, there's the issue of people not interpreting test results correctly. And so we're simplifying it, trying to do it in the least amount of visits possible can really help us increase testing, subsequent linkage to care, vaccination, and treatment for those who need it.
So speak up to increase general awareness and make it easier. Maria, what about you? Any other steps you would suggest?
I think the two most important steps are increase awareness, moving testing and treatment to community And also, I think, involve more primary care physicians. Primary care physicians are not devoted to liver disease. They pay more attention to diabetes, cardiac diseases, probably because these diseases have more symptoms. But I think it's really important that also primary care physicians that are a key point for early diagnosis also are more involved in liver diseases.
As a primary care physician, I echo everything you say. Professor Ali, what about you? Immediate steps that the viral hepatitis community can take to make a positive impact?
I agree with Maria that most of them, they are offering the service for the day-to-day service. They are not acquainted with this viral hepatitis prevention, awareness, and treatment facilities. So again, I am coming to the same point. There should be a structured viral hepatitis control program among the refugees. Second thing, stigmatization and discrimination is most important, because when it will come out that someone having hepatitis B or C, definitely the secrecy should be maintained so that they can be treated properly and without discrimination in the society and family and other members. And of course, the most important strategy should be the awareness building among them.
Sydney, you've heard some inspiring words from our advocate, but I leave the last comment to you. As someone who is not only an advocate yourself, but someone who perhaps, from what you've told us in your journey, never imagined that's what you would become as someone who lived with hepatitis yourself. So tell me, what do you think people like you and indeed others in the hepatitis community can do to make a difference not just to migrant, immigrant, and refugee populations, but to the whole world?
I think education people, not only in the hepatitis community, but also mainstream society, for them to know more about what hepatitis B is, and for us to feel less discriminated or feel any stigma around, and then get people to go test it if they live in the family or people at risk of getting hepatitis B, trying to get them to go get tested and giving them more information and reassure them that they will be okay. They'll get supported by the healthcare community services about hepatitis B.
That is such an important point, and your experience certainly shows the importance of healthcare services being provided for all, so that we can, as Maria put it, improve the health of the whole community by early diagnosis, using structured programs, reducing discrimination, increasing education, and of course, early treatment and vaccination as appropriate. Well, thank you so much, Sydney, Camilla, Maria, and Professor Ali, for providing your expertise and insights into viral hepatitis among refugees and migrants. And thank you all for listening. This series has been truly inspirational. It's been a privilege for me to be involved, and we really do hope that all of you listening have found the insights as valuable as we have. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to the Hepcast on Spotify, which means you can also leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts so others can find the show.